This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
This episode of Lead Singer Syndrome is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/leadsinger, enter promo code LEADSINGER, and save $3 off any new subscription today. Loot Crate, baby, Loot Crate. What is up, my sinners? Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, Shane Told, takes you into the lives of other lead singers, where we talk about what it's like to be the front man, or front woman, in this case, of a band. Today we have an absolutely incredible episode. I'm joined by the super talented Lynn Gunn of Paris. And this episode is super, super honest, and I really loved how forthcoming she was with questions about her sexuality, about her upbringing, and even their new record and some of the struggles they've had, because let's face it, they have a very, very big record coming out, album number 2. As they say, it's the make or break record, so we get a lot into that, and it really is a great talk, so thank you so much for joining me this week. As always, I love when you guys get in touch with me. We got a Facebook page. Go on there, like the page. Instagram, Twitter. I'm on Snapchat, which is Real Shane Told. And of course, old-fashioned email, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Feel free to hit me up anytime if you've got suggestions for the show. Maybe there's a guest you want to see. Sure, let me know. I can try to hook it up. But as always, your feedback is encouraged and appreciated. In other news with me, I'm going on a solo tour. I've been talking about this for the last few weeks. I have a solo project called River Oaks, riveroaksmusic.com, and I'm finally taking it on the road. So if you live in Philadelphia, New York City, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, or Detroit, or, you know, Michigan, whatever it is, Pontiac, Michigan, please come out, buy tickets, come see me play. It's only like 12 or 13 bucks. Tickets are available at riveroaksmusic.com. And a lot of people are asking me, well, Shane, what are you playing? Because River Oaks just has one EP out. Well, I'm going to be playing a lot of Silverstein stuff. I'll play a lot of Silverstein acoustic songs, and I'll play a lot of covers, and then I'll just be hanging out. So please, whether you're a fan of my music, if you're a fan of just this show, it would be awesome for you to come out, support me, support what I do, and it really would make a difference. So again, if you're in any of those five cities, please look into picking up a ticket. And again, the URL is riveroaksmusic.com. Also, if you want to support the show, Christmas is coming up, and I know a lot of you guys are going to be buying stuff on Amazon. If you're going to use Amazon and you want to throw us a bone, it's really, really simple. When you go to Amazon, don't just go to amazon.com. Go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. And what that'll do, that'll take you right to the Amazon homepage, and you log in like normal, and anything you buy, my show gets 4%. And that helps keep the lights on. That helps with some of the costs associated with the show. And it really is a great way to support us. And while we're on the topic of supporting the show, we're about to start up the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Now, what that's going to be, it's going to be a monthly subscription, and for a very low cost, you can get bonus episodes, bonus content, unedited episodes. You'll be able to submit questions that you want me to ask guests, and you'll be able to buy merchandise. Only members can buy merchandise, which is going to be pretty rad. We got a lot of stuff. We're working on the designs right now. Stuff's coming out super cool. I'm really excited to launch this. We're hoping for next week. Hopefully next week we'll have the launch. We'll have everything ready to go. So please keep a lookout for that. Also, I want to welcome a new sponsor to the show, Loot Crate. I'm really, really stoked because what they do at Loot Crate is super awesome. They're a super rad company. So excited to have them on board helping us out. I'm going to talk all about them a little later in the episode. But thanks to Loot Crate for making this episode possible. All right, let's get into this episode. Thanks again for joining me. Here it is, my conversation with Lynn Gunn of Paris. Never thought that I would feel like this. Such a mess when I'm in your presence. I had enough that you were making me sick. Gotta get you out of my system, yeah. It's my house. And I think it's time to get out of my soul. It isn't yours anymore. Hi, Lindsay.
How's it going?
So good. How are you?
Good. Nice to officially, or not officially meet you, but nice to phone call meet you.
Nice to phone call meet you. Well, we met before.
When did we meet?
We met on Warped Tour in 2015.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, and it's funny.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm stupid.
We were
totally
around.
I totally just made this connection. Yeah.
No, it's okay.
You guys were hanging out with Beartooth all the time.
We definitely were. Yeah, Silvertooth.
Silvertooth,
yes. What? Yeah.
Sorry, I totally fucking spaced there.
No, it's totally, totally cool. I mean, you have had a bit of a whirlwind last couple years. It's been absolutely crazy, so I don't expect you to remember everything. But no, you came up to me and you said, my name is Lindsay. And I said, my name is Shane. And do you go by Lindsay or do you go by Lynn?
Either or. Usually my closer friends will call me Lindsay.
Yeah, because like, but Lynn Gunn has got to be like the coolest stage name ever.
Yeah, it's like my evil alter ego name, I guess.
No, but it's like you kind of lucked out that you know, like a lot of times, you know, like actors and stuff will like shorten their names because they have kind of a mouthful last name.
Yeah, my last name's like a total mouthful, so I totally had to shorten it a little bit.
But it worked out to be Gunn. It's like so badass, you know?
Yeah. I used to play softball. And I was a catcher, and I had quite an arm, so they would call me the Gun with two N's. like I had it on my helmet and stuff, so it was kind of something. I was like, I'll bring this back.
There you go. So, are you a big baseball fan? I mean, you're from Boston area. It's kind of a thing.
Red Sox all the way.
Yeah.
I haven't been keeping up recently, but I used to do when I was playing softball, especially. Yeah. What about yourself?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm a Blue Jays fan. So, like, we're basically like arch nemesis.
Ooh, yeah. I got to go.
Sweet. Okay, that was great. We got 2 minutes out of
great interview.
That's perfect. Good interview. Yeah, peace. No, I'm a huge sports fan. And I know, like, you know, I was talking to your manager, Maddie. Obviously, a huge Boston sports guy, too. So,
he's a Boston everything guy.
Yeah, he sure is. That's cool. No, it's kind
Boston,
of
Boston, baby.
It's kind of funny. Like, you know, Maddie, and I did a podcast with him as well. I don't know. I think this one will probably come out first because, I mean, he's was a singer for a band Lost for Words.
Yeah, you're saying you talked to him.
Yeah, and we had a great conversation and we talked a lot about you guys. But what's really kind of fascinating for me is, you know, you guys are having this kind of crazy career where you're blowing up so fast and your manager is not like this big typical like manager that like used to manage some huge bands. Like this is just like a punk kid from Boston that used to sing in a band that has no experience as a manager, yet he's the one steering your ship. Like that is so unique.
Yeah, and I would trust nobody else at the helm of the ship. If that's the right word.
Yeah, that's so cool. How did that come about?
I think it's really cool that you pointed that out because I think it's a really cool story because we met him really kind of not coincidentally, but just it almost seemed like fate in a way.
Yeah.
So we were in a band prior to Paris and we were like in the studio and we were recording an EP and at the time we were still in high school. And we had like a session after school one day with our buddy who was recording us and he ended up canceling on us that afternoon. And we were all super bummed. We're like, what the hell? And this is when we like still didn't fully understand how anything worked.
Right.
And so it was like the end of the world, but he like rescheduled us for the next day. And I am guilty of I hadn't listened to Lost for Words at the time when we'd met him, but our guitarist Alex, like, is super pop punk fan, like Transit, all the Boston local bands, like Lions, Lost for Words.
Yeah.
And he was a huge Lost for Words fan, so it was funny. One day we were talking, and Alex was like, or I think it was actually that morning when we went into the next session. Alex was like, "Oh, it'd be so cool if we had like Maddie from a Lost for Words feature on the EP or whatever." And I was like, cool, I don't know who that is, but I'm down. And we had school and then went after and our friend drove us to the studio. And we pulled up and there was like a van in the driveway and I was like, who's this? There was like a Johnny Cupcake sticker on the van. And I was like, somebody from Boston. And so we got down there and we got down to the studio and we there he was, just sitting on the couch, like on his phone, shaking away, being really fidgety as he usually is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he was like, "Oh, nice to meet you. I'm Maddie. Like, I'm here for a session after you guys." And he's like, "Is it cool if I just like sit in while you guys work?" And we're like, "Yeah, totally." And so we were just working. I think we were doing some vocals when we were there that time. And by the end of like our session, he kind of poked his head in and was like, "Hey, like, I don't mean to step on any toes right now, but..." Basically was like, "I really want to help you guys out and just kind of take you under my wing." And like, he's like, "You totally don't have to," but he was like, "I know a lot of people who are like, know a lot of people and like, I've been in the scene for a while. I could really help you guys out. Make sure you guys are taken care of and looked after."
Yeah,
and
we're
like, "Totally." And then months went by and he like didn't contact us or anything. We're like, "Oh, he probably forgot about us." And then like one day out of the blue, he just like came like rampaging, was like, "All right, this is what we're doing. This is a game plan, yada, yada." And, so we just started kind of playing around locally and, just eventually we got signed to Rise and pulled on two other managers and here we are now.
He
took over and like we put all of our faith in him 100% and he did not let us down at all. And
no.
I think he's been a great influence on us and a great role model for us, especially just like in how to, not just common courtesy, but the etiquette and just like how to be a band with longevity and like treat people the right way, which is something we had obviously aimed to do in the first place. But like he's has a very good head on his shoulders about everything, about being respectful and making everybody family and just doing things the right way, which I'm incredibly grateful for. Cause I think that's not something that doesn't happen enough, in this industry.
Yeah. Well, having a good relationship with a manager is important, you know, and I think it's like him being on the same level as you, you know, being a singer, of a band, not just being a guy that's like used to manage like some other pop star or some like, you know, other band that was big 10 years ago and now they're trying to do it again. You know, it's because you know, having like a real, you know, and he really feels like part of the team, you know, too, which is cool. But you know, he's had a hell of a job. I mean, you guys have, it's been crazy. Like, I don't know if I can think of a band, like, you guys are still on your first record. I know you're in the studio right now and I want to talk about that a little bit later, but you know, you blew up so fast and you still only have one record out and you're playing these sold out like headline shows where you basically have to play all your songs. Like, that's so funny to me.
The only songs we know.
Yeah. You have like 12 songs and you have to play them all basically. Like, that's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we totally have the same reaction of just kind of like, how the fuck did this happen and what is going on? But
yeah,
we're incredibly grateful and super stoked for everything and, are just riding with it and seeing where we're going to go with it.
There must be times like, I mean, you're only 22. I shouldn't say you're only 22. You're 22. You're young. You're 22. And it must be crazy to walk out like you guys did like Lollapalooza and, you know, like stuff like that to just walk out on stage. Like, do you feel like, has it hit you like that you belong or do you still feel like this is just crazy?
It's been funny because I think a lot of people expect like when you get into that position, I think people are pretty 50-50 on it. People either expect you to like completely crack and be like, "What the fuck?" or totally just like take it by the reins and like own it and run with it. And I will be straight up, I completely am terrified of all of that. But I understand that like the positions we're put in and the opportunities we're presented are incredible. So I'm always trying to like just think about that instead of psyching myself out and getting too nervous and overwhelmed. But it definitely, like, at times I'll just be like, "Oh, I don't think I can do this. Like, why am I up here? This is like, I don't know. You don't feel like you're cut out for it." But, I think eventually once you step up there, you kind of just like something comes over you and just happens.
Do you feel like you're the same person on stage as off stage, or is it, like there's a switch and then you're just like, you go from being Lindsay to Lynn Gunn. You know what I mean? Is that really kind of happened to you?
A little bit of both. I think that, deep rooted in me is definitely like Lynn Gunn and like this wild and loud chick.
yeah.
Who just kind of goes for it. But I think, like the way I carry myself and how I am around people and like just everybody, and just how I kind of naturally am is just very soft spoken and quiet and kind of timid, I guess. But like deep down, I am really passionate and like just very enthusiastic about what we're doing and really believe in it. And so it's like a funny, weird contradiction in a way. But I think both sides are very genuine and true to me. But I think that side definitely just comes out the most when we're on stage. So it's definitely like an amplified projection of myself, yeah. I guess, but it's still very genuine and it comes from the heart. And I hope people can see that and know that. I still think there's like a weird timidness when I'm on stage though, because like the second I have to talk, I'm like, oh, hello, hi, how's it going?
Well, you know, so that's funny. And that's, you know, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. And yeah, you know, so we talk about that stuff sometimes, like, you know, on stage banter is like one of those kind of funny things.
Because
there's bands, it is terrifying. And you know, there's bands that kind of get up there, especially like, you know, I know you come from Boston, like I'm sure you've seen so many hardcore bands like play and you come from that. Totally. And there's like this, like you get up there and you're like, what the fuck is up, Boston?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like,
I
there's the,
see you rip someone's face off.
Right. And there's that like tough thing, which is like a lot of times it's very contrived. And,
yeah,
you know, and there's bands
totally.
That'll get up there and basically, like, they'll say the same things in between songs, more or less. They'll just insert city here. And,
yeah.
And I'm, like, very much not that way. Like, I kind of just, like, you know, I just try to be myself and try
totally.
To, like, understand that everyone there is in the same environment as me and, like, play to the environment.
Totally,
and,
totally,
and,
totally.
And, you know, and it is something that's taken me a lot of years to figure out, but... yeah, there is times though when you just you're focusing on the music and then you stop and you're like, oh, it's my, I'm the singer and I have to say something. And there's times when
like,
you just don't
shit.
Know what to say.
Totally. I feel like, have you ever done this before? Sometimes if we're like far on a tour, the boys and I will play a game and they'll be like, all right, you need to say this on stage or find a way to like drop this word in there.
I love
like,
that. No.
It totally spices things up a little bit. Like we were over in the UK when we were there for the first time. I think it was like two springs ago.
Yeah. I'm in the UK right now, actually.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Hey, tell everybody I said hey.
Yeah, I'm waving. I'm waving to the walls of the room.
Wave to the cloudy sky. I think we were in crap, I forget the name of the city, but it's like, it's not Brighton, but it's kind of the same, similar to Brighton. There's like a beach in the area.
Okay.
I don't know,
whatever.
Same thing.
It's probably raining
whatever.
There right now.
Yeah, we were there and like, I remember we were like really stressed out that day or something. And one of our other managers, Nate, was with us and he's super goofy and likes to prank people constantly and just do stupid shit. And he was like, all right, you're going on stage. And he was like, you're saying this, this, and this. And I think I had to say like Heronius, Bill Clinton, and then like one other thing. And like,
Heronius?
Heronius. And I don't even know what it means.
I don't, Heronius, I'm not sure what that means either. I know erroneous would mean like an error, but Heronius, no, I don't know that word.
It might have been erroneous.
Erroneous on both counts. It's like Wedding Crashers. I know that movie like off by heart, but okay, Bill Clinton, yeah, and you managed to work it in?
I did. I think I like panicked and I just said, I think it was like right before we started playing a song, I went, psst. Bill Clinton, and everybody was like, what the fuck? Because I don't think anybody really over there knows who he is fully, especially like the younger generations.
They've probably heard of him.
Like, I've heard the names. I don't know who he is.
Oh, you do a nice accent. That's great.
Thank you. I try.
Speaking of presidents, you mentioned Bill Clinton. We have a new one. Well, you have a new one. I'm not American. How is that, you know, clicking inside your brain right now?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very divided time for a lot of people right now. And that is like makes complete sense and is completely understandable. And I think a lot of people, especially minorities, LGBT community, people of color and just different religions. I like everybody in that whole spectrum, I think, is extremely scared right now.
Yes.
Which is completely valid and understandable. And like as a openly gay female, it's definitely like kind of intimidating, kind of scary. But it's one of those things, and this is like kind of my outlook on any situation in life. It's one of those things where it's like, if something negative is happening or something unfortunate, you're placed in a weird circumstance or situation. It's like you can't cower in a corner and be afraid. You have to stand up and you have to accept this is the situation, and you have to work up from there and just like flip your mindset on it. And you need to adapt to it and work with it and do whatever you can to fix that situation.
Right.
And so, so we've been doing like limited edition shirts where we've been donating to, different charities and stuff, and we've been like making a list of different organizations we want to talk to, like Trevor Project. There's the, I think it's called the Alley Coalition. They take place in Boston. So we're just trying to think of like anything we can do as a band to help and kind of like give people a little positivity and like help sure. people contribute too. Cause I think a big thing for people right now is they don't necessarily know what they can do to help. So we're trying to like kind of step in and like just kind of give a little bit of push to people,
do you feel
whether
some...
that's through donating or volunteering yeah. or anything like that.
You mentioned you're openly gay, and I know that you've said in past interviews and stuff that at first you kind of were, you know, wanted to keep that to yourself. You didn't want to
totally.
Necessarily talk about it. And now you're much more open about talking about it. Do you feel now with like the state of the country and, you know, the LGBT community, your presence now as like almost as a figurehead of the scene and being, you know, a gay front woman of a successful band, like, do you feel like there's a lot of pressure on you to do even more and say even more?
To an extent, yeah. And it's always been kind of like a push and pull in my head, because it's one of those things where it's like, I don't want this to be something that's like a defining factor of our career, or like to get in the way, or not even get in the way, but just like be a distraction from what we're doing.
Yeah.
But I have realized it's incredibly important, especially in this day and age, especially during these times, like
yeah.
with everything going on, visibility and representation is incredibly important right now. So I'm just looking at it in that way. And I think, I think that's kind of my take on it right now. I'm just trying to be a human at the same time and
and
do the right thing.
And that's the thing go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think people will pull whatever they want from that. And hopefully that's as positive as it can be. So
yeah, it's funny because you're put in this position where you're like, shit, I think, you know, I have to say something. And there's like young people and there's, you know, young females that are probably grappling with this that are, you know, that are like, okay, I'm gay and I'm trying to figure this out, you know. And, you know, you have to be there for them. But at the same time, like, I don't want to harp on your age, but you're 22 years old. Like, when I was 22
totally.
Years old, I didn't have a handle on anything. Like,
totally.
I didn't feel like I could be inspiring to others really at all, because I was still trying to figure myself out.
Totally, totally.
So I totally understand that.
Yeah. I think a lot of our fans, at least, the ones kind of more my age are very understanding towards that. And it's like, I think it's really cool, especially like you can kind of grow together with these people and like, just totally relate. But yeah, it's definitely like a lot of pressure to put on someone my age, but I think, I'm up for it. So
yeah.
As long as people just, understand that I'm a growing human too, just as much as they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, well, you mentioned the thing about your career, and, you know, and not wanting to be, I understand, like let's say you're at a show
mm-hmm.
and there's a percentage of the crowd that cares about things going on in the country and politics and human rights. And then there's a percentage of people in the crowd that just are there to fucking see some music performed.
Totally.
And rock out. So there's always like a hard mix there to know kind of where you stand. But, you know, with your, have you had backlash at all? Like from, you know, being yourself, have there been people like that have come after you and kind of been negative or been, you know, pushed hate on you because of, you know, the things that you say and do?
That's a good question. Knock on wood. You mean as far as just being openly gay?
Yeah, I guess that's mostly what I mean, but also just also like the other thing too is, you know, you guys have had like you guys have a song Holy that's like, you know, I don't want to say, let me word this properly. Like the undertone is like, you're not exactly stoked on Christianity is kind of and I wonder like you got a lot of young fans that are female, like, there's got to be parents that are like, okay, this woman is the devil. You know what I mean? Like in Kansas and in, you know, in the backwoods of Alabama, someone's like, totally. You can't listen to that fucking Paris record. What is this Euro trash shit, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think there's definitely like a big misconception. That was the last part that was funny.
Yeah, I was laughing at my own joke. I'm glad you cut the... What is this French band? They suck.
Satanic. There's definitely like a misconception, I think, with that song from a lot of people, and especially like early on when it was first released and I was getting asked about it. I was like, I don't know how to, I didn't know how to like talk about anything properly or like in a understanding way, or I guess eloquent way now. And someone like asked me about it. I was like, oh, it's about like a bad Christian. And like, it totally got like taken out of context and like blown out of proportion. What I really meant was it's just about kind of religious hypocrisy and just hypocrisy in general. Mm-hmm. It was about like a friend's mother who is incredibly religious and would kind of force that stuff down our throats constantly when she herself was not a great person.
Yeah.
So, and it was just funny. It's just kind of, I think that's something that's very prevalent in religion, but also just any other aspect in life. People are easy to dish out the flaws of other people, but they can't look at their own.
Yeah. I've written many songs.
It's just mostly
about that. Yeah.
Totally. you know,
has that ever happened where some, like you, I mean, you know, our band is like a vegetarian band. Mm-hmm. You know, and we have vegans and whatever. And we used to work with like, you know, PETA and we used to do a bunch of stuff like for animal rights. And
yep.
I had parents emailing me saying stuff like, my daughter wants to go vegan because of you and blah, blah, blah. And like people getting mad at me for that.
Such a disaster.
Right. Like, oh my God, can you believe it? And so I just wonder if that's happened to you where there's been people being like, you know, you're going to bring my daughter to the dark side with your filth, you know, like, has that happened to you at all? I'm just curious if that's ever happened.
Knock on wood. It has never been like a weird confrontational thing with a parent.
Fuck,
or
that's good.
Or anything. It's been like amazing. And I'm actually genuinely shocked at like the amount of support and just like positivity behind it.
I know.
Totally. But I maybe like things have popped up in emails and stuff, and we've had like a satirical, or is that, did I say that properly? Satirical. It was like a satire article.
I think they know what you mean.
Yeah.
Satirical is correct. I'm pretty sure.
There was like a satire article on us. Somebody wrote up and they were like, we've been like blasting chemtrails into the audience and like making everybody gay and to keep your kids away from me and right. like all this fucked up shit. I think it was a satire article. I'm not fully sure, but either way, it was right. so belligerently like, just insane that it was just comical. But it definitely like, I think with this situation, I think a lot of times with people coming out and people like figuring out their sexuality, is a lot of people are still very much like not unsure of it, but they're just unsure of like how to deal with it at home and like what to do with their family. And I think like our shows offer like a good kind of safe environment, and like just our fan base in general kind of offers a safe place for a lot of people who are yeah. still kind of on the fence on where they stand about that. I think a lot of a lot of fans have like found the courage to come out, but I think also think a lot of like, they're obviously doing it at their own leisure. And I think that's incredibly important and at their own pace. But yeah, we had some girl come out during our meet and greet to her mom. And she wrote on a piece of paper, "Mom, I'm gay." And she like showed it to me kind of secretly. And I was like, oh, this is a big moment. Is this okay? We were like about to take a picture. And she was like, yeah, it's fine. She knows. And I was like, oh, okay. And her mom was like standing off to the side watching us take the picture. And then right when they snapped the photo, she like held it up. And her mom was like, "What? Really? This is how you tell me?" And her mom was super cool and supportive about it. And it was like a really, really cute moment. So, but yeah, honestly, knock on wood, like almost every reaction has been incredibly positive and supportive. And I think that's saying a lot about people in general, which is really cool.
Absolutely. What about your family? You talk about, you know, someone telling their mom. What was your family structure like growing up? Did you have brothers and sisters? Like, are your parents still together?
We got a nice, happy family. My mom and dad are still together. I have an older brother. And, my parents are like the greatest people in the whole world, and they've just been incredibly supportive of everything that my brother and I want to do. My brother is like a chef who lives out in the mountains and didn't go to college, or he did go to college, dropped out, wanted to be a chef and climb mountains and do that. And they're like, okay, just like support yourself, and as long as you can do that and as long as you're happy, that's what matters. So we've definitely lucked out in the family department. And I'm incredibly grateful for that.
That's great. So you and your brother were close when you were younger. How much older is he than you?
He's like 3 or 4 years older than me. So whenever, like if I was in the fifth grade, he was in the eighth grade. When I was a freshman in high school, he was a senior. So we definitely fought a lot like during those years, just because I was a little asshole when I was a teenager. I still am. But
So we
definitely got into some shit then, but we're totally cool now.
Did he, cause I have an older sister too. I only have one sibling and it's older sister. And she was like definitely instrumental in, getting me into music. Like 100%. Like if it wasn't for my older sister, she listens to this show. So hi Rena.
Hi Rena.
Yeah, she's the best. if it wasn't for her, I definitely would never listen to like, you know, some of the bands that got me into, you know, music, that I started playing guitar and stuff. Is that similar to your situation at all? Did your brother show you some bands?
Oh yeah, 100%. And this is funny, cause like when we first would start to get interviewed and like asked about like our background in our life, I totally like feel like I just blocked this section of my life out of my head and like never even mentioned it. But my brother totally like inspired me to play music and play guitar, and got me into like, he got me into all the classics when he was in when he was like in the eighth grade and I was in the fifth grade. He was like showing me AC/DC, Led Zeppelin,
cool.
Metallica, like all the classics. And so he like started playing music and playing in bands, and our middle school had like an after school jazz band, and he and like some of his buddies would always just like, they'd go to jazz band and then after they'd stay like an extra hour and just like write songs together and be like a rock band. And that was something I was like, oh, I want to do that so bad. And I'd always like stick around and just annoy the shit out of them and like, like, let me play. And so my parents got me like a little 3/4 size, like acoustic Yamaha.
Yeah. How old are you at this point?
Fifth grade. So I was probably like, maybe
10 or 11,
maybe a little, probably like 11 or 12. Okay. I want to say. And I just kind of started teaching myself. Actually, no, this is about the same time. Just started teaching myself, and I would get home from school before my brother sometimes, and I would like go into his room and steal his guitar and play it and accidentally drop it and find dents on it and be like,
break
how
a
the
string.
Fuck did this? Yeah, that kind of stuff. And then he like ended up getting a drum set at one point, and he and I like started to kind of jam together. We'd like switch off between guitar and drums and kind of go back and forth. And totally got me into playing music and like playing with people in a band and performing and stuff like that.
What was the first like band you were ever in?
It wasn't like a band. Well, I guess the first one was like I said, the after school jazz band.
Right, right.
It was like those guys, and we had like a winter recital or something, and we performed like one song. But I wouldn't really say it was like a band. But our first band was with two of my friends from high school, and then Alex in Paris now, who joined at like a later point.
What were you guys called, and what'd you sound like?
We were called Operation Guillotine, and we sounded crazy. it was like a typical like breakdown singing break, that kind of stuff.
You were singing?
Yeah, and I had no intentions of ever being a singer or like fronting a band or anything. We had like a screamer and stuff, and I was just like the quote unquote clean vocalist.
But you were playing guitar.
Yeah, I was playing guitar and I was singing.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, that's such a common theme on the show. Like I would say most people that are on the show, when I ask them about that, they're all like, yeah, started playing guitar, you know, couldn't find a singer, so I just did it.
Yeah.
And because I was like, and it was the same for me. Like, I was the only one in the room that could, like, remotely carry a tune. So, you know, so I by default became the singer. And now I'm in a band where I'm just the singer. You know.
And I say you do a pretty damn good job.
Oh, well, thank you. But it's a funny thing how often that happens.
Yeah. I think that happened with, like, Fall Out Boy, too.
Oh, with Patrick?
I think I remember, like, hearing an interview.
Definitely see that. Yeah.
It must be how we're made.
The secret to success is not wanting to be a singer. The secret to being a successful singer is not wanting to be a singer.
or to do anything. Don't actually want to be it and you will do it. just kidding.
That's really funny. We're going to take a quick break from my conversation with Lynn, but we'll be right back. I just got to tell you about this awesome company called Loot Crate. Now, I just received my first Loot Crate in the mail, and it's so rad. I've always been into, you know, blind box action figures, you know, like the Kid Robot style. And of course, you know, I'm a nerdy guy. I like retro video games and Star Wars, and I've been talking about how I started playing Pokemon Go a lot. So if you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, you gotta check out Loot Crate. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise that you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items that you can only get with Loot Crate. So treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. They're always watching. They've designed a system to keep you down. They're meddlesome. Hello, friends. It's time for a revolution. Fight the power and pave the way for a brighter tomorrow with December's Rebellious Crate, featuring exclusive items from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more, including an exclusive Funko Pop figure, our monthly t-shirt, and pin. Now, here's how it works. You have until the 19th of December at 9 p.m. Pacific time to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. You cannot get it. So make sure to head over to lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter code leadsinger to save $3 off any new subscription today. Again, that is lootcrate.com/leadsinger. Seriously, you get so much stuff for such a low price every month delivered to your door. It is awesome. Check it out. So, okay, back to kind of growing up, you know, I guess at this time you're playing music and you're joining bands, but also like you must have, you know, been starting to understand your sexuality and everything. Was that difficult in school and stuff, like, you know, like socially?
I didn't come out till after I got out of high school.
No, I know you didn't come out, but I mean, you must have known.
Yeah. I was definitely at that point. I don't think I'd fully realized it. I was like, something's definitely off. Like, I totally don't want to make out with cute boys and stuff. Like, they're cute, but I was like, something's a little off here. And And then I started taking like studio art classes and doing like a lot of visual art classes basically my junior and senior year. And that's when I kind of started to, I like made friends with a lot of the art kids, and my whole high school was like super diverse, just like so many different cultures, so many different, just like people like just doing different stuff.
Yeah.
And, I kind of gravitated towards like the art programs, and, a lot of the kids in the art program were like either gay or bisexual, or, I think there's even a couple, there's maybe one transgender, I forget. But it was incredibly welcoming and like warming, and everybody was just so accepting towards each other. And I was like, wow, this is like an option. This is totally, and it's totally cool. Like,
yeah.
It's like these people are fine. They're so happy. There's a family here. There's a foundation here. And I thought that was really cool. And that definitely like kind of opened my eyes to it and made me realize like, it's totally okay. And there's nothing wrong with it. And it's completely just how you're wired. And like,
yeah.
Yeah. And there's like so many people out there who will love and support you. And so that was like just a big realization for me in high school was just like being friends with the art kids and kind of, seeing that and seeing like a family like that. And so it made me open my eyes to it and definitely made me realize that that's like an option and it's totally okay. Or not an option, but like that's for me, it was okay.
I totally
didn't even think of this.
No, I know. Yeah. And then, so, I mean, you say like, obviously, so you knew when you're in high school that you were different. And then how did it, like when you told your family, was that like the first people you told, or did some other people know?
I told my brother first. I told a couple of close friends first because I had actually started seeing this girl and really, really liked her. And so they were kind of like the first people to know, my friends in that circle. And then a couple months into dating this girl, I like told my brother and he was like totally cool about it.
Yeah.
And he was like, you should probably tell mom and dad soon though, just so you know.
Right.
I was like, I know. And this is actually really funny. My first ever tour I went on was with Maddie's band, was with The Lost for Words, and I was filling in on guitar for them. And we were about to leave for like, I think it was like a short East Coast run. It was like 2 weeks. It was with Hit the Lights and State Champs. And
oh, cool.
Like right before we left, I had written up a letter for my mom. I think I typed it up and stuff and folded it up, left it under her pillow. And right as I was saying goodbye to leave for like the first time ever, I was like, hey mom, I left you a present under your pillow. She was like, oh my God, thank you. Like, thought it was going to be something, like a present or something. And I just kind of like dumped this entire thing on her. And, she, for a couple of days, she like didn't want to talk to me and it was like kind of negative and really weird. And my brother was like, maybe don't talk to her right now. But I got home and it ended up being totally, totally cool. And it took maybe like a year or so for both my parents to be like completely cool about it. But, they're totally supportive of it now and have been great about it. And, I think like the negativity came from, they were more so concerned about how kind of my other family would handle it and like how my grandmother and
the old school people.
Totally, totally. Yeah. My dad's side of the family is kind of a little bit more conservative and stuff like that. So they're more so concerned about that and how that was going to be, which turned out to be totally fine. So.
Well, that's good. And, I had a friend, you know, who came out as gay and he had a really, really hard time with his dad and still does,
totally.
You know, and it can be really hard and that sucks, you know, that,
yeah.
And all, you know, and going back to Trump, you know, and everything, it's like, I felt like we were making progress, you know, in this way and that things were getting better. And now it seems like, you know, they like, not so much with generally like speaking with like laws and stuff, because I don't think that those laws are going to change back or anything, you know, in terms of gay marriage and you know, hopefully not, you know, women's rights and stuff. But the whole culture surrounding it is what I'm scared of people, you know, hate being prevalent again and hate being okay,
You know, like Facebook is bad. And Facebook comments are bad enough. People still feel like they can post things on there. But if now that there's the leader of the free world basically spewing this hate, you know, I worry about that side. And I just thought we were going to, you know, the baby boomers are going to die and we're in control, you know, our, you know, younger generation. But I'm still scared of that, you know?
Totally. And that's completely understandable. And like, I'm with you on that. But yeah. I also do think this election definitely showed, like, because I guess the popular vote was Hillary had won by like 2 million or something by now. Yep. I think they're still counting it. And I think that says a lot. And I think that although it's very like prevalent and clear of like who is totally on the wrong side of history and who totally is still living in like the 1950s. I think it's very clear like who isn't and who is totally standing on the right side of things and who has a good outlook on things. And I think that's like something to hope for and something to look forward to. Cause there's a chart somewhere that was just, it was the election based on like, I forget I think it was a certain age group or just like,
oh yeah. Yeah. The age group, the age brackets are hilarious to see who voted which way. I know.
Yeah, and they showed like I think it was millennials and like the younger generation, like if only we had voted, it was completely blue across the board. And I think that's something that's like really beautiful and really hopeful. And I think again, it's one of those things, as long as you just kinda, like I said, adapt to it and like just do all you can on your own and like as your own as an individual and in your own I guess immediate community and family, like if you're taking care of that and nurturing that, I think that can only extend outwards and I think we'll be all right in the future. I think the next few years might be kind of rocky.
You got to stay positive, and I think we do as young people, we need to bond together and you know, and that's where you come in, Lynn.
Definitely. And another thing about another thing about this whole topic, especially just in this day and age, everyone's like a social justice warrior and everybody's incredibly politically correct and everything in that realm, which I think is great. I think it's great that everybody's kind of like conscious of this stuff going on and is very aware and like wants to contribute positivity and like bring forth like a lot of the issues that are that like have been happening and are happening and are existing. But I think, and this is something I think a lot of people need to work on. And this is like something myself need to work on is just like, instead of crucifying people and like jumping down people's throats immediately when something happens or like somebody says something or, something happens, I think it's really important that like people remember to communicate and like have a conversation and not just immediately attack someone and like dismiss them. Cause I think I have a couple friends who go to like liberal arts school and as open-minded and like aware of everything as they are, they're incredibly, I think, impatient and like intolerant towards, like ignorance and which is not a bad thing. It's good that they're incredibly open-minded and like don't want anything to do with negativity and like just backwards thinking, I guess. Yeah. But I think there needs to be patience. There needs to be
some education for people too. You know, because the fact of the matter is that some people, they don't know. Like, you know, when you talk about, you know, going back to, you know, gay, like there's people that don't know what terms they're allowed to use now. You know what I mean? Because like, can I say the term homosexual? I don't know if I can say that anymore. Like, you know, these things are constantly evolving. So if all of a sudden, like somebody says a word that they, you know, you don't start screaming at them. Like, it's better to be like, hey, you know, like someone said to me the other day, someone used the word Oriental and to describe an Asian person. And I was like, yeah, you can't say that anymore. You know, like, and the person legitimately did not know that, you know what
totally.
I mean?
So that's the thing. I think a lot of stuff just stems from people. Obviously there's like a big lump of people in the world who just genuinely are awful people, and I don't know if they can really be fixed or rewired.
Oh yeah,
in their heads.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, you can't save everybody.
Yeah, totally. And there, maybe in another life they'll figure it out. But I think that a lot of this stuff just stems from people just not being educated and not knowing any better, and also just not being like explained it properly. Because I think like if someone says something wrong, the immediate reaction, especially like online and stuff, is people just are like, "You're a bigot. You're stupid. Like, how can you not know?" It's like, so people simply just do not know any better. And like instead of attacking these people, you need to like not even sit them down, but just be like, "Hey, what you said, maybe you could fix it by saying this instead. And here's why: A, B, C, and D." And it's like, not only will these people like understand that much more than, and then like having just like hate, not hate, but just negativity like spewed at them, like that's going to make this person who didn't know any better, like they're going to want to stand with you this time.
Yeah,
and they're
going to
be like,
"Oh, they'll definitely
okay.
respect you. Respect the person."
Totally,
more
totally.
Because like
I think totally. I think it's like, as much as this person may have like unknowingly or knowingly like disrespected you by saying this or that, it's like you're also, I don't know, you also need to respect them when you're trying to correct them on it, or you're trying to converse with them about it and like explain it to them. So I think, yeah, I think that's something that's going to be really important for especially like people my age, and I think in this day and age, especially, I think that's something like a lot of us need to work on. I need to work on it sometimes. I've been guilty of like attacking someone for saying something.
Absolutely.
Like totally.
We're all sharing a bus. We're on tour in Europe, and we're sharing a bus with the Devil Wears Prada. And those guys are like so progressive and so opinionated. And like, we're having these screaming matches on the bus where we all agree, but we're screaming at each other about like how fucked up the world is when we're, you know, it's just like, it's a crazy time right now where everyone is, everyone is super, super high strung and very, very like, I think it comes from fear, but it does come off aggressively. And I think that that's, I think you're absolutely right.
Definitely.
So, can we talk about music?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Okay. So like, you're in the studio right now, right?
Yeah. Well, take off. We were literally like nonstop, like immediately jumped off Japan and festivals and went straight to the studio. So we have like a week off and then head back.
And have you guys written a record?
I would say it's pretty written, which is kind of like finalizing vocals and programming and putting the finishing touches on and making sure like we don't hate it when we come back to it, because we haven't like stepped away from it since we started it. But I would say it's about like maybe 70-75%.
Are you
done.
Stoked on it?
I'm so stoked on it, like incredibly stoked on it.
And can you tell the people like what to expect? Like, is there a big change in sound? Is it kind of a natural progression?
I think it's a little bit of everything. It's like, I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, you know how it is. You don't want to make the same record again. You don't want to make the same record twice or three times or four times.
I don't know if it's a good record. Just make it over and over again.
True.
I don't know. Like I sometimes I'm like, you know, if I love a band and I love a record, I mean, I kind of just want the sequel, to be honest with you. It happens to me a lot.
Okay, touche. I think it's a good natural progression. I think everybody we've kind of shown it to so far has been like, I wasn't expecting it to take this turn, but I really like that it took this turn. It's kind of like I get it. That like, it makes sense that it went this way, but like they maybe just weren't expecting it like sonically or production wise. I think there's definitely a lot of new sounds that will be incorporated and kind of like signature ones that'll kind of interweave through the record. And we even tracked like harp and.
Oh, really?
Some fun, yeah. We've been doing some fun stuff, but it's still gonna be dark. It's still gonna be like raw and real and emotional and like everything we want to be able to deliver and look for in music and in ourselves as well, just as listeners. I hope people will enjoy it.
Are you feeling pressure you know, this being your second record, like the second record is the make or break record for, you know, every band. Everyone knows the sophomore slump is a thing.
Totally.
You know, did you feel or do you feel that pressure? Is that a real thing? Because obviously when you make your first record, you don't know, like you don't really know if you're going to be big. You don't really know if anyone's going to hear it. But now you know everyone's listening.
Yeah, the first record, you're kind of like, we're just going to throw these ingredients into this stew. And if they like it, they do. If they don't, they don't. And
you guys made a really good stew. That was a great stew.
Thank you.
It was delicious. Would eat again.
I would say it's probably like minestrone a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
So now you're on to the main course, though. This is the second record main course. So you're preparing it, and you don't want to overcook it. You know, this is the analogy's terrible.
Totally.
But you know what I mean. You know what I mean. Like, how's that been for you? Like, has it been stressful?
Totally, 100%. I will not lie at all. When we first got to the studio, like right off tour, I definitely had a few weeks where I was like severely depressed and didn't even want to get out of bed or do anything, and like did not even have like the desire to write anything, and like I was like, I've never felt so like uninspired and just like, I guess like I'd never like lost that spark to write before, and like to feel that was absolutely heartbreaking, and I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Well, yeah, what was that stemming from?
I have no idea.
Oh my God.
It was like the first couple of weeks we were in the studio, it was just like that. It was like, and it was so frustrating because it was like, I was literally writing all year and making demos on Logic and prepping for this time. And I was like, we were just hustling through these tours and like being able to record was the treat for me, especially, just us in general. Just cause I really enjoy the process, and it's so cliche to say, but, I really genuinely just love writing music and making records. And, so this was like this big, huge moment I was waiting for. I was like, I'm going to let loose. Like, it's going to be so good. Like, and as soon as we got there, my brain and everything just kind of like shut down. I was like, no. And I don't know how it happened or why it happened, but eventually got pulled out of it slowly. Like little moments would be there where it would just like an idea would come and we'd run with it. But it was definitely totally a struggle. I think it was definitely like a lot of stress maybe subconsciously seeping in that I wasn't aware of. But I worked through it, and we got what we needed from it.
Great. Well, yeah, it can be daunting too, to be like, okay, we've, you know, especially when it's been go, 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 like all these shows, all these tours, you know, going overseas, flying, jet lag. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, Lynn, write a record. We're going to the studio in 2 weeks.
I don't, you're like, but I don't even know how to be a person. Never mind. Like talk about experiences as being one. I think it was, and it's funny, the biggest struggle, like after I kind of got over that little weird period, our biggest struggle has been narrowing songs down and like picking which ones we want to really focus on and work on for the record.
That's a problem.
It's a very, very good problem, and I'm totally not complaining about it whatsoever. But I think that's like where the pressure's kind of coming in now, is like, all right, where does this song fit in? Where is this going to go? Like, how is this going to roll out? Still trying, like, kind of figuring out, I guess, the theme and the overall, like the visual side of things too, especially. So it's definitely, that's, I think, where the stress is coming in now. Like the songs are fully there and definitely.
Cool.
Yeah.
And vocally, obviously, like when you made the first record, you were younger and you hadn't toured.
Yeah, I was like 18, 19.
Yeah, and you hadn't toured like everywhere where, like, you know, this isn't really something that gets talked about either, but like singing on the road and singing like in the studio are like different, you know, like you're singing 6 nights a week and, you know, your voice isn't always like feeling great, and you kind of like sometimes have to push it a little harder or whatever than you would in the studio or vice versa even. So have you noticed like any change in your vocal style or singing or like,
oh, yeah,
how do you feel like about that, and how's that coming out?
A little bit of both. I think, yeah, you're definitely 100% right about like singing on, like on tour and performing is completely different from being in the studio. Cause when you're in the studio, you're just kind of thinking about the song as a whole and like how to make that song the best you can. And sometimes you like, or at least for me on the first record, we like kind of overshot some stuff. And like after touring on it for like 2 years, you're like, fuck, I can't keep up with this anymore. Like, and obviously like being so young and, or just in general, like as a fucking human being who's just changing and evolving, you're going to like adapt different styles and different techniques and different, like different ways to go about, singing and performing. And I think from like day one to now, like my style's completely changed as a vocalist.
Right.
And like, and it's almost to the point where it's like, it doesn't sound like I went back and listened to White Noise for the first time in like a really long time. I was like, I sound like a little baby. And it's like, I'm almost kind of mad that that's like forever set in stone now.
Everyone hates their first record. Like I hate my screams on the first Silverstein record are atrocious. Like, I don't even know what. I'll say this. It doesn't sound like anything else, but it doesn't sound good.
I think it's good. I think it's great.
Well, thank you. I don't know. But yeah, it's funny, you know, like, I mean, like Adam from Taking Back Sunday always talks about how he hates his vocals on the first records. Like, sounds like nails on chalkboard to him, you know? So it's, I think that's just something that has to happen.
Definitely. I think every singer probably goes through it 100%. But yeah, it's been, I think that's been like kind of intimidating, not intimidating, but like definitely turned into like a really big stress. Especially when we like did like Jimmy Kimmel and like a lot more, I guess, taped and recorded performances. Cause like, you know how it is, if you're getting recorded and like put onto a TV or like a live stream or whatever,
yeah,
it's like, it's not going to sound like it is going to sound live. It's not going to sound like it is on the record. No. Like, it's going to sound weird and it's going to sound fucked up. And, it's so frustrating.
It's true. No one, like, sounds good on TV.
Knowing that people, yeah, and that's unless you're like fucking Bieber or something. But yeah, like, but who knows?
Then it's fake.
It's fake. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, that was a huge stress for me, like towards the end, especially. And I feel like when we first started out as a band, like, and first started touring, I definitely was stupid and like went on YouTube and like looked at people's comments and saw what they're saying on like our live videos and just was completely like destroyed my confidence as a singer. And like, and that is, that even carried over into now and like throughout our entire career so far. Like, I've always just kind of like try really hard and work really hard at it, but just like still have that at the back of your mind of like, all right, people are waiting for you to fuck up. And it's like totally not healthy and not cool, but yeah, so it's definitely been like a weird kind of overhanging cloud on this next record of like, all right, just be a little more weary of your voice and like how you're going to be performing these songs live and how that's going to translate. And but also not wanting to compromise the songs and the recordings.
Yeah. Oh no, that's like the thing when I make a record, I like, I don't know, like, you have a vocal range, we all have a vocal range. Like, I cut myself off at like about a B, you know, it's like where I cut myself off. Mm-hmm. And, but there's definitely like notes that I'm going to hit in the studio and I'm like, this is going to be so hard to do, sing this song live.
Yeah.
And I never change it anyways. I always just do it anyways. And I'm like, I'll figure it out later. And then like, yeah. And then 6 months later when we're on tour and the band like, let's play this song. And I'm like, oh no, like this song is so hard to sing, you know? So it's a real thing.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, I started taking like, what the hell's going on? Oh, someone's trying to call me. I'm going to hang up on this person. Hang on. Go away, Nate.
Go away.
yeah, so I started taking lessons from this lady like halfway through our record cycle. I said her name's Wendy Parr and she's worked with like a Sarah Bareilles and like, that doesn't matter. Anyway. And she was telling me the other day, I was like in one of our lessons, and she was like, oh, she's like, really think about what keys the songs are in when you guys are recording. I was like, well, that's a little late because we kind of like recorded half of them already and like can't really change them. But she told me, I guess when you sing live because of adrenaline and because of like nerves and excitement, your voice goes up like three cents or I forget the proper terminology, really? But it goes up very, very slightly. And so like lower stuff is like even harder to sing. So like, and higher stuff is I guess a little bit easier to sing, 'cause you're just amped up. Which makes sense. 'Cause I feel like when you're in the studio, you're super relaxed and you're not really thinking about that. And then as soon as you get on stage, it's like, okay,
yeah,
your body's going to act against it kind of.
Well, sometimes for me, like I find it's harder to get up to the notes live because like you're running around and you've just sang like all these songs in a row and you're sweaty and you're tired and you know, and you've sang like every night that week and you're just like
done.
Yeah,
and you've been doing cardio basically for like an hour.
Exactly.
While trying to sing like as well as you can.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely true, but I kind of know what she means about the sometimes it is like weird. You can sing higher like out of nowhere.
Yeah, like, where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah, that's cool. So you started taking lessons just to improve, or because you were having problems, or a little of both?
A little bit of both. I think I just wanted to like make sure I'm like conserving my voice and taking care of it and like not doing something that's eventually gonna fuck it up in the long run. But yeah, so just kind of to take care of it and like just tighten things up and like make it easier. Wendy, who I've been working with, is super like is all about just making it as easy as possible and like effortless. And it's still like really hard to wrap my head around some of this stuff, but it's definitely like proving to definitely help, at least in terms of like preserving your voice and like taking care of it and not destroying it within like a year. So knock on wood.
No, that's awesome. And back to the record, when can people expect it to be coming out?
I can't say any exact dates, but it's definitely going to be 2017.
2017. Okay. Yeah, that's very soon. Baby. But that could be, so it could literally be
a year from now.
It could be 3 weeks. It could be 3 weeks from now, or it could be a year and three weeks from now.
Yeah, who knows?
Who fucking ever knows? Yeah, well, thanks for the bullshit answer, Lynn.
Well, I'll give you a little loose time frame. Like, we're supposed to be finished up recording by like January or so, and then the next few months after that will be all about like filming videos and
figuring
out the rollout and stuff. So we will not stop working, but it's just a matter of when we will share that with other people, as you know that how that always goes.
I do. There's like these days with the music industry, there's like so many different ways you can do that shit. Like, and there's no, yeah, like, which, it used to be like there was one way to do everything. And now there's like a million ways, and who even knows what the right way is anymore?
Yeah, which is definitely like an even another added on stress of like, okay, people are now making fucking short films and like making, doing crazy shit with the rollouts of the records and just like to bring it to a next level. So it's like, okay, how are we going to do that? And how do we like not get lumped into everybody else? And how are we going to do that?
Well, I mean, you guys have so much hype. It's been so great having you on the show, and thank you for taking the time. And I think, you know, like 2015 was the year of Paris, and then 2016 was the year of Paris. And I think 2017 also going to be the year of Paris and many years to come. So it's just really, really great to see you guys continuing to have so much success.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Anything else you want to tell the people or anything we missed?
No, just thank you so much for having me and chatting and I guess to everybody else, be patient. It's coming.
It's coming. It's coming.
I promise.
Don't freak out. It's coming. It's recorded. Things have been recorded.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
We'll cross paths soon.
What'd you say?
Hopefully we'll cross paths soon again.
I know. I hope so. It's been a while. So, yeah, or like take us on tour or something. You know, if you want, we'll come hang.
Ooh.
I'm putting it out there publicly.
My Dr. Evil pose is going on right now. Ooh, but nobody
yes.
can see it.
Mm. We would like $1 million.
That would be pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, that's our guarantee. So hope you can afford it. All right. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
All right. Thank you, Shane.
Yeah. You have a great day.
You too.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
So there it is. My conversation with Lindsay or Lynn, regardless, an incredible front woman. And she is just so cool. It's so, so nice to have her on the show. Thank you to her manager, Maddie, for making it happen. And make sure you keep your ear to the ground, because I'm sure there's going to be a new Paris song single probably out pretty damn soon. Next week, we'll be back with an all new episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. Just like every week, the show comes out on Monday, so make sure you're subscribed. And if you like the show, tell a friend, please. Let's keep spreading the word on this. That's really how these things grow, through word of mouth. As always, I'll leave you with a tune. Here's the song we talk about a little bit in the podcast. This is the song Holy by Paris on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
Didn't notice.
Oh, hey, one last thing while I still have you. If you're from Toronto, or if you like Toronto and want to visit Toronto, I suggest you come to our Stay Warm Festival December 17th and 18th in Toronto at the Danforth Music Hall. My band Silverstein has curated the lineup. We have such amazing bands as American Nightmare, Citizen, Code Orange, Protest the Hero, Flatliners, Wilhelm Scream, River Oaks, and many, many more. Check out staywarm.soundrink.com. We got general admission and VIP tickets available. Trust me, this is not a show you want to miss. So many great bands. Thanks again, Toronto. Once again, that's December 17th and 18th at the Danforth Music Hall. And the ticket link is staywarm.soundrink.com. We'll see you there.